This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, once again, how are you doing, friend?
Well, it's only 83 in your parking lot, so I'm still breathing.
It says 82, so that's a...
Well, I'll give you 1 degree.
Yeah, it's agreeable now.
But I'm parked way out there in the sun on the end of the parking lot, see, where it's the hottest.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be a little warmer.
Nobody ever leaves a spot under those shade trees.
I wonder why.
I don't know. They're selfish.
I know it.
Oh, gosh. Hey, well, thanks for listening to the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show this day. And if you have questions about any portion of your yard that you would like to get some ideas on, you can call 673-4464. 673-4464.
Bingo.
I hate it when they give a phone number on the over the radio and they go, "Hey, I call 543-2111449. And I go, "What did he say?"
1-800-JIMBO.
Anyway, this show is about garden tips and landscaping and how to treat your stuff so it stays alive. And you who garden out there who have yards with landscaping, best listen up, because I got some good tips for you all the time. That's what I do.
There's no bad ones.
No, I don't ever give bad tips. That would be a lie. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad it's only 83 or 82 or whatever the heck it is. I can stand that.
Can I put a burst in your bubble then?
Burst my bubble.
Yep. Well, it's going to be 95 around Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Thanks a lot. You really made my week.
Well, the weekend's going to be nice yet.
Oh, goody. I work the weekends.
Highs in the mid-80s.
I can handle the mid-80s.
Yeah.
You know, let's see, was last week when it was pretty hot here? I forget.
Yes.
It was like 96 in the parking lot when I left at 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm 15 miles from here out in the canyon. And I got to my house, and I got this temperature gauge on my front porch. Of course, it's a covered front porch. Mm-hmm. And it was 80.
80?
80. From 96 to 80.
Oh, you lucky.
I know. I built my house that way on purpose. Ha, ha, ha.
What? Phone call.
A phone call? I haven't said anything.
Good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Say, I have a small lemon tree that I got from you a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it was doing really well. We transplanted it this spring, and was flourishing, and it had like 9 little lemons on it.
Whoa.
About the size of the end of your finger.
Uh-huh.
And this heat came around, and the leaves kind of curled.
Uh-huh.
And they turned black like olives and fell off.
Why?
That's what I'm wondering.
That's what he's going for.
Where did you have it? Where,
I wasn't.
Where was it? Outside, inside, or where?
It was outside in the sun.
In the sun? All day sun?
All day sun. It probably didn't like that.
Well, it might not have. But how often were you watering?
Well, I'd stick my finger down there, and if it was just, didn't feel wet or damp, I'd water it.
Okay, approximately.
I probably watered it about every other day, maybe every 2 days.
Yeah. You didn't, soak it. You just give it a little bit of water, right?
Well, I set the hose there for a minute, probably.
A minute?
And let it.
You can get 6 gallons in a minute,
Well, that could be, because I would fill up the... from the dirt to the rim of the pot and just let it filter through. Too much?
Yeah, could be. But the thing is, they are a heat-loving plant. There's no two ways about that. Now, on the stems, right next to the stems, are there any little green buds kind of popping out under, where the leaf used to be? There might be a little bump there or a little tiny bud coming out, anything like that you see?
I didn't lose any leaves.
Oh, okay. They just turned black?
They just kind of curled up. No, they didn't turn black.
Oh.
They're just green as can be.
Oh, good.
And I have another bud that came out.
Good.
And I do have one little lemon on it right now, but no, I didn't lose any leaves on it.
Oh, good.
They just
okay.
kind of curled like, damn, this is hot.
Huh. Do you see any bugs on it at all?
Nope. No bugs. I checked for that. And, there was one leaf that had kind of a web in it.
Uh-huh.
Like a, well, it wasn't like a, or like a spider's web or some kind.
Yeah, it was probably the infamous lemon spider.
Oh, okay. Well, he's gone.
I was joking with you, by the way.
Yeah. Okay.
but what
that was good. I looked at you, and you had just, didn't even crack a smile.
No, I don't crack smiles. Well, I'll tell you what. If it's in the sun all day, why don't you move it to where it's got morning sun and afternoon shade? Can you do that?
Sure.
Yeah, because you know we've had pretty extended heat. In the past month, and the pod itself, is it still in a nursery pod, or did you put it into a bigger pod?
No, it's in about a 16-inch pot.
Uh-huh. See, because that pod itself, when the sun's hitting it, it really heats up the roots and it keeps them fairly warm all day, even into the evening. So if you could shade the pot somehow, like I say, the best angle would be to put it in the morning sun and in the afternoon shade, if that's a possibility.
That's not a problem.
Okay, and then just be wary on the water. Did you fertilize it at all?
When we planted it, yeah.
And
we used some citrus fertilizer on it.
Okay. How long ago was that, do you think?
Oh, a couple of months.
Yeah, well, the fertilizer, if you had over-fertilized it, you'd see it within a week, 10 days, So I don't think that's the case. But I think it's...
Well,
I think,
it looks great.
Okay. But the excessive heat has a detrimental effect on it. So like I say, just...
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah,
too, that
kick it back and give it some afternoon protection. And
will do.
Don't overwater, don't fertilize, just kind of... Let it get a little bit drier than usual, okay? But
Okay.
And then call me back. Tell me what happened. And if any of these leaves look really bad, just snap them off.
Okay.
Yeah, and then look for little new little green buds will come out.
All righty.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All righty.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. All righty.
I've never had a lemon tree do that.
Really?
Never. Huh. That's a mystery to me. So hopefully that will work for this gentleman.
Yeah.
And that
lemon
tree. So today, and that's a phone call right off the bat, kind of
nice.
Put me off my kilter here.
Fell off your rocker.
I lost my rocker. I was going to talk about rhododendrons and azaleas and those kinds of things today because. This is the time to make sure to prune the big leggy ones that are kind of taking over your yard or blocking your front door or anything like that. It'd be a good time to, knock them back a ways. You're not going to hurt them. They're okay. They still have time to set buds for next year. If you wait too long and then prune them, then you're pruning off the buds that are trying to form, and you have no flowers for next year. So if you've got some leggy ones, go ahead and knock them back. But, rhodies are one of the easiest plants to grow in your landscape. I mean, they are tough. They're resilient. As long as you don't have it on a south-facing wall and sun all day, they're gonna grow wonders. They're just going to do their thing. And like I said, they're exceptionally hardy. There are some that are a little tender, but we don't usually have them here in the Pacific Northwest. You might find the more tender ones that... react to hot temperatures, maybe up in Washington or British Columbia or places like that where it doesn't get 100 degrees for a week. Oh, boy, I tell you.
And then minus 60 the next week.
Yeah, right. But they are really one of the easiest plants to grow in your whole landscape. They're just a good performer. They're evergreen. They've got beautiful flowers. From some of them from very early spring to about May and sometimes beyond, depending on the variety you get. There are varieties of rhododendrons that bloom February, And, you know, it's cold, it's wet, and it's rainy. Yeah. And you can drive around town, and there's a corner by where Albertson's, I forget what road that is, but where you'd turn left and go into Albertson's parking lot, and there's a coffee shop and a gas station in Albertson's.
Yeah.
Well, there's some dwarf roadies right there that, you know, I'm always surprised. You don't see them in the summer because they're just green. No leaves. Just leaves and no
blooms.
They
just look like brush.
Yeah, well, not quite. They look a little bit neater than drush. Louise, this guy. But, you know, you got to come to a stop there, and I'm taking a left, and you look over there, and they're maybe a foot tall, foot and a half wide, and they're just full of purple blooms. They're just gorgeous little dwarf rhododendrons, and they're blooming, and it's cold, wet. We hadn't seen the sun in them, you know, 2 weeks at all, and they're in full bloom. So there are some that are early bloomers, and then, you know, all the way through the spring, there are different varieties that continue to open up, and then there are varieties that don't even open up till about late April, 1st of May, and they'll last till about June. And there may well be some that bloom just in June. I don't know. I don't have any of those, but
a roadie for all season.
Yeah, really. And then there are some roadies I've seen bloom in the fall. Why, I don't know. And I don't know if that's normal for that particular rhododendron. But usually you see something like that in a cooler temperature area, like maybe the coast basically the coast. That would be, what's it get over there, maybe 70 on a hot day?
Yeah.
75 would be a blistering time. But, for a shrub to perform nicely year after year, look good, pretty much remain disease-free unless you get a bug in there and but if they start chomping on the leaves, you can spray and kill the bugs and all that. But once they're established, they're just easy to go. I've got some in my yard that have been in there 20 years, and
jeez,
they might get water once a week if we think about it, or if it's real hot, and I'm not too tired to drag the hose around, you know?
Yeah.
One of those things.
Stop dragging my hose around.
Yeah. And they live. They look good. I had two very large roadies that they were way out, and I didn't water them a lot. And I was testing them, and then last year they bit the dust. And they'd been in for, I don't know, 6-7 years, something like that.
Mm.
And they bloomed, but not. I took them out of somebody's yard. They said, get rid of them ugly things. I said, okay, I'll take those ugly things home and plant them and see if I can revive them. But I did neglect them for one part of a hot summer, and they kind of took a turn downhill, but I think there was bugs involved in the situation,
so
too.
Insects helped.
Yeah, the insects were real good. Yeah, but all they need in a normal situation is great drainage, a little bit of roadie fertilizer once in a while, and a potting mix kind of thing for new roots to take off. And when I say potting mix, you can get some compost material, bark mulch, anything but just straight soil. Mm. And that way those new roots can get out and get established, and you dig an oversized hole. You don't have to do it twice the size of the root ball, but, you know, at least half again as big as the root ball, so that it has room to grow and it'll establish itself. And mulch, I've planted them in pure mulch. I've done experiments in just topsoil just to see, you know, good topsoil, not mud or clay. But and they don't do so hot there. But when you put them in pure bark, they don't even know they've been planted. It's like that's
nice.
their best meal.
They love it.
They love it. Yeah, exactly. And if they're in pure bark, you can hardly overwater them because that bark drains so quickly. And the beauty also of that bark, even though it drains so quickly, that moisture that is absorbed by the bark stays there for a while. It's not wet, but it's moist.
Right.
You know.
Right. It won't drown them.
Exactly. And and that's, you know, that's the best of all circumstances in there. Then we've got a cone.
We have a break.
Oh, a break? I'm not even warmed up.
I know it.
Jeez.
What's our phone number?
673-4464.
There you go. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Oh, we're back. We were talking about Jay Leno.
Yeah, I wasn't. You were. No, I thought he did a very good interview with Kyle.
Yes, that was good. And Kyle did a good job.
So. Yeah. Oh, Kyle always does a good job, for crying out loud. He's an expert.
That is true.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about roadies. I'm get off Kyle for a minute here. And, you know, as I was saying in the last segment, you know, when you have the good drainage and you have bark mulch and all the, I mean, the roots have no problem. And then one of the greatest errors that people make is when they fertilize, they'll fertilize either with the wrong fertilizer or too much of the wrong fertilizer. Because the roots are a surface rooter. So you put the dry fertilizer around the base of the plant and you water it, and then it begins to activate and go down into the root system. Mm-hmm. Well, if you put too much, it's too hot and they just can't take it. And that's when you start to see problems with the leaves. They like go, and they crunch up and fall off. You know,
kind of like we do with too much sun.
Exactly. So when you fertilize rhodies, make sure you get rhododendron azalea fertilizer, and get, you know, it's got to be specific. You don't want lawn food on it, for crying out loud. We got another phone call?
We do.
Hello.
We got lawn food on it. Okay.
All right, you're on the air with Mike Winters. Hi there.
No, he was on the air. I was just breathing air. Okay.
Okay.
So I have a question to ask you. I have three crepe myrtles, however, I have saw my neighbor has one of those. It's a real dark leaf, real dark crepe myrtle. Where do I find one of those? They're gorgeous. The leaves are so dark.
What color is the flower? Do you know?
It's red. Yeah.
Red. Hmm. Is it an older one? Is it an older one?
No, he planted it, I'd say, about 4 years ago.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
gorgeous, because all mine are more green, you know, green leaves, but
sure,
this is just the darkest.
Yeah. Well, the ones the ones I have in stock at the nursery are all green leafed as well. You know, I'm not familiar with that particular crepe myrtle, but what I'll do is. I'll look under my crepe myrtle list and see, you know, read the descriptions of some, and I can probably come up with an answer next week if that's okay, because I can't.
You mean I got to wait a week?
Well,
I'm just kidding.
You still got the phone number, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
But I will look it up, and I'll do some research on it and come up with an answer. How's that?
Yeah, well, that's wonderful, because I won't plant it till it gets, you know, a little cooler fall more.
Yeah, like
guess,
September or something, October.
Yeah, I'm not going to plant till then.
And if I can find them from any of my big suppliers up north, I will make sure I get some.
Oh, good. That sounds wonderful. I mean, it is absolutely beautiful. Huh. The dark, it's like I can't even explain it. It's so dark. You know, the leaves and the stem, everything on it.
Huh.
So
sounds pretty.
Yeah.
I'll look it up.
Oh, it is. And then the blooms were quite large, you know, a whole bunch of buds or blooms on it. You know, it's gorgeous.
Huh.
So, yeah, I appreciate it. Now you can go back to talking about your
fertilizer.
Rhododendrons. Your fertilizer.
And not over-fertilizing them.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I started getting hooked on ferns, all the different kinds of ferns, because my front porch, it likes that weather out there, the morning sun. And so I want to over-fertilize them, but I haven't been. But
good.
I really kind of want to.
Well, just do it lightly. Just do it lightly.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you. And back to Mr. Rhodey.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Back to Mr. Rhodey.
Mr. Rhodey, huh? Okay. Well, you know, I forget how many types of crepe myrtles there are. I think there's 100-plus types and colors and sizes, and there are dwarfs, there are tree crepe myrtles. You know, I mean,
wow.
It's amazing how many varieties of crepe myrtle they are, so... I haven't seen that one with a dark leaf.
Yeah.
But it sounds pretty and it sounds unique. So I'm gonna look it up and see if I can find it somewhere.
You can Google it.
Yeah, I'm gonna Google it. Right. No, I take this thing out. It's called a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I look in there at all the nurseries in Oregon, and they list their products, and I go, oh, there's one that grows crepe myrtle. Okay, I'll call him or her.
Oh, a book.
I know. That's kind of the old-fashioned way, but you know what? I prefer that.
Yeah. It works, too.
It does. It does. And rhododendrons. And, you know, this stuff in general, what I'm saying, applies to just about any plant, but I picked rhodies today because they, you know, they're such a magnificent plant. And like I say, if you have great drainage and a little rhodi fertilizer and a good draining potting mix, bark mulch, whatever combination you can do, the new roots are going to take off very quickly. And they just don't like, if you got hard pan clay, get rid of it. Make a big hole, an oversized hole, and fill it with that good stuff. And you're not going to have a problem with them. You're gonna be amazed at how much good growth you'll get right off the bat. Now, a newly planted rhodi is going to need attention to detail for, you know, in the summer for a couple of weeks to maybe 2 months about water. And you want to, like the guy with the lemon tree, he said he stuck his finger in there and felt it. That's what I recommend to do, because you can't tell from the surface. And you can say, well, I watered it for 30 seconds. Okay, well, how much of that watering actually penetrated
right
down, and how far down did it go?
Mm-hmm.
And so to check it physically and feel the moisture, that's your best test. I mean, I've had these little gauges with this long stem, and it's a moisture reader, and you stick it down into the soil, and it says wet, dry, or bone dry, or something like that. And they're okay, but they don't last very long for some reason. I'm not sure. You know, maybe they work for about 6 months, and then pretty soon they just quit.
Maybe all that dirt gets in there.
It could be, but they're designed to do that.
Do that just, yeah. Do your job.
Do your job or get out of here. But a newly planted rhodi, you know, it's going to need water maybe once or twice a week at the most. And then the second year in the ground, maybe once a week. Mine at home, I might do them twice a month. That's it. But when we do it twice a month, I really soak them good. So it the water gets down in there, gets the roots going, and keeps them alive. But I can always add water, but once it's in there, I can't take it back out. That's the bottom line there. But they are the third year, you know, like it's when it's hot and dry and they've been in for 3 years, try to remember to water, you know, because I know, you know, the natural rhododendrons grow up the North Umpqua. You know, I've driven up there 1,000 times, I think, and over the years. And I'm always intrigued by when you get up there past Tokidi and on the right passenger side of the car when you're going up to Diamond Lake. You know, there's some lava flows and things like that. There's just rock lava. And you'll see a beautiful rhododendron growing in the middle of this crack in the lava. And it'll be, you know, 8 feet tall or 6 feet tall and about that wide. And it's green. It's in full sun sitting there. It doesn't get any water except from the snow melt or if it rains.
Yeah.
And I don't know what kind of fertilizer it gets unless it eats lava rock. I'm not sure. And they're gorgeous. So that's how tough these things are. You don't have to baby them. And when you baby them, you kill them.
You kill them.
Yeah, that's the bottom line there.
Do blackberries grow up there too or no?
I don't think so. There are berries up there, but not the blackberries that we have down here.
When you said growing out of a rock, I thought,
Yeah.
But no? Okay.
No, I'm not sure. I'll look for blackberries the next time I go up there.
High altitude.
Yeah, there's some high altitude berries that grow up there, but I think maybe the prolonged winter with 8 feet of snow probably has a detrimental effect on their overall
well-being
and survival rate.
Probably the only thing that'd kill them.
Yeah, probably. Now, currently, in my research and looking up things all these years, currently there are about 1,000 basic species of rhododendron.
Oh, my gosh.
1,000 different varieties of rhododendrons. And there's many more under construction because you've got a lot of grafted varieties that the fanatic greenhouse doctors are always, you know, hey, let's see if we can graft this this one to this one, and this one here, this one's red, this one's purple, and this one's yellow. Let's see if they'll all grow on the same stem. They do that stuff all the time and invent new plants. And when they are successful, it's a really a righteous plant. I mean, it's like, whoa, how can a rhodia have 3 different colors on it? You
nice.
Know? Yeah, but they do that stuff.
It came from a lab in China.
I don't know. I don't know if they did in China, but then maybe they did. But those guys, that they just hang around in greenhouses and you know, rub their hands together and say, hey, let's try this. If you were independently wealthy and you didn't have to go out and work, yeah, that'd be a fun thing to do and see what you could invent. Let's invent a new plant.
It'd be a nice little hobby.
Yeah, a nice little hobby. I've grafted other things, but, you know, straight grafts. And 1 year, me and another guy, we grafted about 3,000 Japanese maples over the winter. You know, it was cold, wet, and rainy, but we're in the greenhouse. And we had learned, J.D. Vertrees had taught us specifically, he was the Japanese maple king of the world, and he taught us how to graft. So me and my buddy went out there, and we grafted about 3,000 of them. And I would say we lost very few. And that's a very tedious operation because you got these sharp, sharp knives that you have to cut into the stem of the plant, and then stick another specially cut branch from another variety in there, and then you have to put kind of a tar-like material over the wounds, and then you wrap it in a rubber band, a special type of rubber band, to hold them together. Yeah. And then you have to put them on heat beds and see what grows, see what takes. And it's very tedious. It's like doing open heart surgery for crying out loud.
Yeah, I was thinking some of the plants might just reject it.
Well, yeah, some might do. But if you are careful, you'll get, I think we had like a 90% success. You know,
nice.
You know, there was some we messed up, I guess, or they didn't take.
They didn't like it or
yeah,
whatever.
They didn't like it. I ain't going to live here. You know.
Hey, we got to take a break.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be back.
On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, we are back.
We're back, and I've been talking about rhododendrons and had a phone call, an interesting phone call about a lemon tree. And
we'll take yours. Call too.
Yeah, it's 673-4464. And I got to look up a crepe myrtle with a dark leaf too and find out what their name is and where I can get them, because they sounded kind of exotic, so I like those kinds of things.
You always call it Melania.
Well, we could, but I'm not. But going back to roadies, they do grow all over the world naturally. It's crazy.
Wow.
There's a variety that grows in the wild near the North Pole. Now,
are you?
Yes,
wow.
Near the North Pole, not in the North Pole, but real close to
close
the North
to
Pole.
It.
And it's like cold. You know, a warm day there is probably 55 degrees. I'm not sure, but
I guess Santa has to have some company.
I guess. And there are also wild varieties that grow in the sand dunes of Florida. So how's that for extremes?
Weird.
Yeah, but the North Pole and Florida, that's what their range is.
That
from
can't get any more extreme than that.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme. And,
yeah.
they grow in the sand. I did the research on that. They actually grow in the sand and do well in sand, beach sand. Yeah.
That's so, like the lava rock.
Yeah, exactly. But they can't be overwatered in the sand.
No.
And it rains a lot in Florida, I'll tell you.
That's true.
Yeah,
they get all kinds of storms.
Yeah, and like I say, well, think of we got wild ones on our coast.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, well, some of my logger buddies over the years, you know, we're talking about, you know, going hunting here or doing this, and we're in the coast range. And I don't want to go over there, too many blankety blank rhododendrons you got to chop your way through. I got to fight them suckers every day to cut timber. You know, they hate rhododendrons.
And they grow right back.
Yeah, they do. They grow right back. They chop them off with their chainsaw.
Yeah.
And the next year, they're 2 feet tall again, you know? My point is, they are tough. You got to really work to kill them, okay?
not even a chainsaw.
Yeah. But like I said, one of the neatest things to do is drive up the North Umpqua in April and May, and even in June, and you'll see all the wild roadies growing up there in full bloom, just gorgeous, growing in amongst all the trees, competing with all the trees, the Doug fir, the hemlock, and that kind of thing. There's not too many pines up that high, but there's hemlock and Doug fir, and it's there. I saw one day. It was just above Tokadee, you know. It's kind of windy there, so I can't gawk too much. I got to watch the road, unfortunately.
No.
And I saw one that was, it had to be 15 feet tall easily.
Jeez.
I mean, it was gorgeous and growing in between, you know, a couple of conifers there. And it was, you could only see about, you know, maybe half of the plant because the tree branches were so prolific around it. But it was gorgeous growing in the middle of all that and has to compete with the root systems of all the trees. Didn't care. Get out of my way, tree. I'm good.
Give me more.
Yeah. So that's how resilient, that's how tough they are. And like I say, The main killers are hot sun against a wall that has reflected heat, over water or over fertilizer. If you put them in a nice partly shaded place and just water them, like I said before, and fertilize lightly once or twice a year. Remember, when you do it lightly, you can always add more if it needs it. But if you do too much, you can't take it back out. Okay,
it's too late.
Yeah, and that's true of any plant.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
But we're only talking about roadies, okay? But
so pretty much, you leave them alone, they're going to be all right.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And the majority of the roadies that have been imported to the USA that we have around here, not the wild ones, obviously, but the different types, the different colors, the different, and they've come from Asia.
Oh.
They grow wild over there like Madrone grows over here.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were going to say China.
Well, they do in China. They actually do in China as well. The Himalaya Mountains in that region is a huge area of natural rhododendrons. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's cold, high country over there.
Yeah.
And particularly in western China. Yeah, they grow. I mean, it's just, it's amazing.
Oh, jeez. Not only is it cold climate, so are the people.
Yeah, and then they grow wild. They grow wild in northern India as well as Japan and Okinawa. Now, I've been to Okinawa, and I never saw a rhododendron over there. Of course, I was young. I was in the Marine Corps. I was 20, 21. You know, I wasn't looking for roadies, okay?
Right. You were looking, never mind.
You don't know what I was looking for. but that's a very wide range for one particular plant to grow. So, you know, most of our roadies that we enjoy today came early to our country from the seagoing explorers, you know, back in the olden days, they'd load up ships in, say, Frisco or New York and sail across the sea for trade with different countries, mm-hmm. et cetera. And there were actually plant nuts on that ship, the seagoing nurserymen. But and they would be there, and they would dig up some of these really different exotic plants and bring them back. Into, say, San Francisco area, where they would grow really, really well because the climate is so mild to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just kind of started from there. And that's why we've got so many varieties here in this country, because of importing them from Asia.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Thank
you, Asia.
Yeah, and I was surprised that when I was doing my research that northern India, and I thought, geez, Louise, I didn't have a clue that they would grow wild in northern India. But
he hadn't comprehended that
one. No. Oh, gosh. But as I pointed out earlier, some of these are dwarf rhododendrons. They only get maybe 1 or 2 feet tall and about that wide. And then on the other hand, there are varieties that grow up to 20 feet.
That's what you were saying, 15, 20 feet?
Yeah. Yeah, jeez. And I have, like I said, I saw about a 15-footer up the North Umpqua. Had I stopped my truck and pulled off the side of the road, I you know, you probably go back up in there 100 feet and find 10 more.
It's more, yeah.
Just growing up there. But you hit those, you see a lot of those when you get about to the Tokadee area, because you've climbed in elevation sufficiently where it doesn't get 90 degrees up in Tokadee and Diamond Lake. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
And they get summer rainstorms, actually, up there. You know, I mean,
wow.
Some of the clouds, they don't get down to us, but they get mm-hmm. them up there because they come from the east. And so, you know, if you have roadies, give them room to grow. Don't plant them side by side. Don't plant them against the wall. Don't plant them against the fence. I know a client of mine, and I won't name him. He's got he's got four beautiful roadies in the front of his house.
Ah.
The problem is they're about maybe 3 feet from the house, and there are some windows that are, you know, 6-7 feet, and the roadies have grown up over the windows.
Oh,
so they're really shaded and blocked.
Yeah.
And I pruned them a few years ago down to where they should be, and I wanted to prune them again, you know, in the past years.
Mm-hmm.
But this client says, no, I like them that way. And that's okay. Yeah, you can have them that way. But if you prune them, down and then thin them out, they're a lot healthier
mm-hmm.
because there's less, the root system doesn't have to work as hard to generate growth and buds and flowers, et cetera, to that plant. The root system, you're not reducing the size of the root system, because the root system and the top are usually some sort of balance, you know.
Oh, I see.
There's a balance there.
And, yeah.
And if you cut the top down, you've got more
oomph
in the root system to produce more flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And if you know, you don't have to do it. You don't have to cut them back every year, but every other year or maybe every year, the third year, you need to prune them. You need to cut them back and thin them out so that they can have some, you know, some energy to produce more flowers, and they are healthier for that.
They got to have exercise.
Yes, they do. So give them room to grow. Now there are some that love a lot of shade. Some of them like all shade, and they don't grow fast. They're usually a smaller roadie, and they're really less care. And then there are some that don't need any shade, like the one I was talking about in the lava flow up there. And I don't know. It's a wild roadie, but I don't know the name of it. I'd have to go up and, you know, look at it and look at it kind of carefully. But and then you live on our coast.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier.
Another
I mean, it's
total
like,
different climate.
Like brush over there. I mean, you get, you know where the sand dunes is?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
I had a client that had a house right next to the sand dunes off of Highway 101 there, just south of Winchester Bay. Mm-hmm. And he wanted some advice on this and this. So I went over there, and I walked up into the woods a little bit, and maybe 50 feet of pine trees and rhododendrons, and bingo, there were the sand dunes. And I started looking around, and then where I'm standing where these roadies are, I'm digging in the soil just to see what it is, mostly sand. And they're not, some of them are looking good, but a lot of them are kind of leggy, and they're mm-hmm. stretching for the sun, et cetera, because they don't get much sun over there because it's cloudy or foggy or raining
or whatever.
And there's a lot of shade where they're growing.
Yeah.
But they were just hundreds of them in a very small area, you know, wherever you looked along that whole half mile of road that I had to drive on, there was literally probably thousands of them growing naturally. No care, no nothing. They weren't specimen cool-looking plants, but they were alive.
They were alive.
And the few leaves that they had were nice and green.
Nice.
Do we have a break?
We do.
Okay, I'll be back.
And that'll be in just a couple of minutes. Okay. News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we are back with Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show. Mike was just telling me about his trip to
Bandon, where I almost froze to death.
Yeah,
it was 90 something here, and it was like probably 58 there. I don't know.
Your ears almost froze.
Yeah, I mean, it was cold. That wind on the beach was fierce. I mean, after about 15 minutes, my ears started hurting.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? It could be 100 over here.
Yeah. and it was probably 20 mile an hour winds easy.
Wow.
Easy. And then we went up to the, you know, into town itself. You know, and there's a little fish and chips place we always like to stop at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't believe all the people over there. Every parking spot but one, I got the last parking spot to get our fish and chips. And I mean, there was plates from Arizona, Wisconsin, California. I mean, everywhere. Even some Oregon plates.
Come to the beautiful Oregon coast.
It is. It's gorgeous.
It definitely is.
I mean, but I should have had a coat. Well, anyway, I'm talking to roadies here. I'm not talking to us anymore. And I was talking about the coast. They grow in the coast. They grow in the high mountains. And even in some in the deserts like Florida, sand dunes, et cetera. But in hot, dry country, they do need shade in the afternoon. Like if you're growing, if you're living in Bend, say, or even east of Bend, where it's kind of wide open and it gets pretty chilly and pretty warm and windy, they would need some protection. They would grow if you had the right planting medium. They would grow if you really knew how to grow rhododendrons, because the cold's not going to hurt them and the heat's not going to hurt them, because if they're shaded and protected, they're okay.
Yeah, they seem to be able to adjust.
Exactly. and but they will grow if they're treated correctly. And keep in mind, the larger the leaf, the more shade is required.
The larger the leaf?
Yes. Some of the roadies have very large leaves, and if you put them in the full sun, you'll find they get leaf damage from the sun fairly quickly.
Okay.
Where a smaller leaf, or let's say a 3-inch long leaf by 2 inches wide, is not as susceptible to heat damage or sun scorch as the little small, you know, the
smaller ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I never knew that until I was doing some research on in one of my books on rhododendrons. I got like an encyclopedia of rhododendrons with pictures. And, you know, I thought, whoa, that's amazing. Now, one place, and we'll wrap it up with this probably, one place that they don't do well is adjacent to concrete, like next to the foundation of a building or a concrete retaining wall or even a driveway. You plant those too close to that, the alkali in the concrete, there's some that always seeps into the ground over the years, and they don't like that. that's not their bag.
It's not their thing. Yeah.
So if you're going to plant rhododendrons alongside of a building or along a driveway or something like that, or even in a concrete planter, something like that, you don't want to plant them too close to the edge. From a house perspective, I'd put them 4 feet away from the foundation at a minimum, and because they're gonna grow and fill the space. But that way, the concrete, the acidity of the concrete, is not gonna hurt them.
Bother them?
Yeah, it's not gonna bother them. And that client I was telling you about earlier, his grow really well, and they're about 3 feet from his foundation, but they grow real well, and they haven't shown any. Any concrete poisoning? How's that?
That's good. I like it.
But you don't want to have them up next to a house because you get reflected heat, or next to a fence where they can't really get the good air circulation, especially if it's in a western position where the setting sun is hitting them. Because not only does the plant get hot, but the reflected heat off the structure continues to keep that thing warm, and you'll find that they'll struggle a bit in there. So the space thing is to give them air circulation, and the other part of that is if you prune them correctly and make sure you prune them off the fence or prune them away from the wall of the building of whatever it is, they're going to get better air circulation. They like that wide open spaces. And also the other thing about the concrete, they will absorb too much calcium hydroxide.
Now, what's that?
Well, it's a chemical that kills roadies.
Oh, okay.
Calcium comes from the concrete, man.
Oh, okay. I was wondering where it came from.
I'm sorry.
The sun?
Yeah. No. No. Calcium hydroxide.
Ah.
And this is going to deter normal growth and could kill the plant.
Mm.
That's why I say space it out.
Yeah.
Get it away from the concrete part of it. And if you insist on, you know, like I say, foundation roadies, use the dwarf ones, you know, the small ones that don't get so large. And so, therefore, their root system is not going to be large at all. And there's a whole lot of varieties. And, you know, some of them, like I said earlier, are only going to get 2 feet tall and 2 feet wide at maturity.
So it'll be about right for that area.
Yeah, it'll be about right. And they're still a good hardy plant, and they still do a good job, and they'll bloom and be pretty. And you don't have to mess with them. And they're not going to be poisoned by the concrete foundation.
There you go.
Yeah. Are we done?
We are already.
Wow, man. Huh, okay.
You got about 10 more pages there.
I do. I mean, I was going crazy writing notes and doing my research, but that's okay.
Well, hang on to them.
I will.
There's always next week.
Oh, I know. That way I only have to work half as much getting it together.
There you go. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening.